as the media is power's means for inducting us into their stories, the stories they want us to believe, gathering us to serve or at least not to impede their vision, it's important that we who long for freedom install filters or power planted story detectors in our ears. But before we continue with this theme, which is ongoing, a brief pause to give thanks for Harper Lee, one of the few who show sown divisions to help us understand. That's key, rather than to be divisive. Particularly as when the announcement that she was publishing another book was met by a lot of advance attacking, my power planted story detector went off, as there's absolutely no doubt she's a national treasure among us. So why the preemptive strike? Unless it's because she, and this is a rare thing, brings so much light to the issue of class. And the power guys don't know what the book says. So let's take a moment to appreciate the song and word of Harper Lee in To Kill a Mockingbird. Now, we'll meet Atticus in a minute, but this is Macon, the town. Macon was an old town, but it was a tired old town when I first knew it. In rainy weather, the streets turned to red slop. Grass grew on the sidewalks. The courthouse sagged in the square. Somehow it was hotter then. A black dog suffered on a summer's day. Bony mules hitched to Hoover carts flicked flies in the sweltering shade of the live oaks on the square. Men's stiff collars wilted by 9 in the morning. Ladies bathed before noon after their 3 o'clock naps, and by nightfall were like soft tea cakes with frostings of sweat and sweet talcum. People moved slowly then. They ambled across the square, shuffled in and out of the stores around it, took their time about everything. A day was 24 hours long, but seemed longer. There was no hurry, for there was nowhere to go, nothing to buy, and no money to buy it with. Nothing to see outside the boundaries of Macon County. But it was a time of vague optimism for some of the people. Macon County had recently been told that it had nothing to fear but fear itself. That's Macon. Now, we'll meet Scout in a minute, but this is Atticus. Atticus was feeble. He was nearly 50. When Jim and I asked him why he was so old, he said he got started late, which we felt reflected upon his abilities and manliness. He was much older than the parents of our school contemporaries, and there was nothing Jim or I could say about him when our classmates said, "My father." Jim was football crazy. Atticus was never too tired to play keep away, which requires you to stand in one spot. But when Jim wanted to tackle him, Atticus would say, "I'm too old for that, son." Our father didn't do anything. He worked in an office, not in a drugstore. Atticus didn't drive a dump truck for the county. He was not the sheriff. He did not farm, work in a garage, or do anything that could possibly arouse the admiration of anyone. Besides that, he wore glasses. He was nearly blind in his left eye and said left eyes were the tribal curse of the Finches. Whenever he wanted to see something, well, he turned his head and looked from his right eye. He did not do the things our schoolmates' fathers did. He never went hunting. He did not play poker or fish or drink or smoke. He sat in the living room and read. Now that was poor, feeble Atticus. Now here's Scout. Scout is speaking, and this is from earlier in the book. She's almost six and has just had that day her first experience of school and does not want to go back. I told Atticus I didn't feel very well and didn't think I'd go to school anymore if it was all right with him. Atticus sat down in the swing and crossed his legs. His fingers wandered to his watch pocket. He said that was the only way he could think. He waited in amiable silence, and I sought to reinforce my position. You never went to school, and you do all right. So I'll just stay home, too. You can teach me like Granddaddy taught you and Uncle Jack.
Sounds like a good plan to me. What's wrong with that? Well, we're going to find out what's wrong with that.
No, I can't, said Atticus. I have to make a living. Besides, they'd put me in jail if I kept you at home. Dose of magnesia for you tonight and school tomorrow. I'm feeling all right, really. Thought so. Now what's the matter? And then she tells him some things before finally getting to the point. But if I keep on going to school, we can't ever read anymore. That's really bothering you, isn't it? Yes, sir. When Atticus looked down at me, I saw the expression on his face that always made me expect something. Do you know what a compromise is? He asked. Bending the law? No. An agreement reached by mutual concessions. It works this way, he said. If you'll concede the necessity of going to school, we'll go on reading every night, just as we always have. Is it a bargain? Yes, sir. We'll consider it sealed without the usual formality, he said when he saw me preparing to spit. The remainder of my school days were no more auspicious than the first. Indeed, they were an endless project that slowly evolved into a unit in which miles of construction paper and wax crayon were expended by the state of Alabama in its well-meaning but fruitless efforts to teach me group dynamics. What Jim called the Dewey Decimal System was school-side by the end of my first year. So I had no chance to compare it with other teaching techniques. I could only look around me. And my interjection, when she says, I can only look around me, we're hearing authentic judgment, the real human being, and they're looking out, as opposed to that trained not to see, continuing. I could only look around me. Atticus and my uncle, who went to school at home, knew everything. At least what one didn't know, the other did. Furthermore, I couldn't help noticing that my father had served for years in the state legislature, elected each time without opposition, innocent of the adjustments my teachers thought essential to the development of good citizenship. Jim, educated on a half-decimal, half-dunce cap basis, seemed to function effectively alone or in a group. But Jim was a poor example. No tutorial system devised by man could have stopped him from getting at books. As for me, I knew nothing except what I gathered from Time magazine and reading everything I could lay hands on at home. But as I inched sluggishly along the treadmill of the Macomb County school system, I could not help receiving the impression that I was being cheated out of something. Out of what I knew not. Yet I did not believe that 12 years of unrelieved boredom was exactly what the state had in mind for me. And that's an unquote from Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird. That reminds me of an Onion article that I quoted near the beginning, or first third at least, of waking up, freeing ourselves from work. That was hella funny. Talked about inauthentic speak, in earth speak, what it feels like to go through the education system when you're used to actually communing with the earth and really learning something. Now this, what we just heard, is a great illustration of the contrast between the clarity with which children see and the challenged vision of adults under class due to manufactured scarcity and the stories, false stories, we're led to believe. So while 10,000 years of subjugation produces a profound paralysis of action in us, each child starts out fresh with backs that must be made to bend.